into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Oh, the shape that will get. If you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
You're very welcome along to Team 33 and a call here with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on tonight's show, because it's an international week and because we actually don't have any proper football for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be looking at the winners and losers of the Premier League season so far. Who has been good? Who has been bad? Who's lost out? And who has benefited from the weird season that we've had so far? As usual, Colin Buig and Kieran Bradley are on the line with me. Lads, how are you getting on?
Hey, lads.
Good, man.
So as always with Team 33, we come up with these concepts, we come up with these ideas, and we don't really have a set out format or a set out scoring system. This is largely based on opinion, largely based on what we're seeing on the pitch. So we'll start off with the losers, first of all, because nobody really cares about the winners. Everyone just wants to know who the losers are. I'm going to start with my first loser, and it has to be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United, because it's been another terrible start to the season. It's sort of like a doppelganger version of last year's season, in the sense as it just hasn't been working on the pitch. It's not been coherent. There's been issues off the pitch, and as usual, the blame is falling at the door of Paul Pogba. So, Colm, what have you made of Manchester United this season so far?
Extremely average to okay on the spectre. Like, they've been good in the Champions League, with the exception of the last game against Istanbul Beşiktaş. But really, like, the last 10 minutes away to Newcastle at St. James's Park was good. And then, in fairness, I think the majority performance against an Everton side who were reverting to form, traditional form in the last decade, was good. But then, you know, the nadir of the Spurs' capitulation was amazing to me how Solskjaer stayed in the job. When you look at it from a results point of view, is like football is obsessed with the last few years. But then when you look at how the club is run, you're not surprised at all that Solskjaer is there. And still, so United haven't been great, but there's not going to be any change anytime soon, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the perfect manager in this current regime for Manchester United, in that he'll, you know, there's a good chance he'll get the team into the top four again at the end of the season. And really, how much difference is it financially for United to qualify for the Champions League versus winning the Premier League when you're at that level of commercial viability and activity and success? So really, as long as United are still on the main TV channels in the big matches, the owners are going to be happy. And Solskjaer is probably just about good enough to get United into the top four. But in terms of trophies and meaningful trophies, i.e. the Premier League and the Champions League, when it comes to United, that's not going to happen anytime soon. And then it really depends from there that fans have to revert their expectations.
Kieran,
and if they do, they'll be okay.
Kieran, we've spoken about this a couple of times already, just kind of off air and in the office when United are playing. There's no grey area with United anymore. It's all, like, for example, after the Newcastle game, everything was fine again. The team's playing great, counter-attacking team, and it's all starting to take shape. And then they lose again. And then again, it's Solskjaer the right man? He's not strong enough to stand up against the board, and it's a disaster zone again. So, like, where do we actually stand in United? Is it as bad as we think it is? Is Solskjaer the man that's going to lead them out of this, or is there any sort of nuance in this conversation at all?
I think it's become a cliche that United are good on the counter attack and struggle to break teams down for a very good reason. And I think actually that really has to reflect very poorly on the coaching. I think United, to my mind at least, are the most strikingly poor side. What I mean is, like, they're very poor at identifying where they should be in relation to each other at any one time. And I know, again, it's a little bit of a cliche, but they do seem to do things off the cuff and rely on things to be coming off the cuff. I personally don't see any real tactical innovations outside of, again, and laudably so, really good performances against teams that are going to press United. But you don't get any feeling that they're improving players individually. Now, the looming spectre in all of this is Maurizio Pochettino. He's constantly linked with the job. And I personally think he's a fantastic coach individually and collectively. I think if you look at his performance at Tottenham, I honestly don't think there's even one player that you could say that he didn't have a hand in improving significantly in some cases, like Harry Kane, Son Heung-min, etc. So when you're naturally kind of comparing and contrasting him with someone like Pochettino, Solskjaer doesn't come up especially well. Now, the problem is we've, as you mentioned there, like, United are an especially schizophrenic team at the moment. Like, the performance against Leipzig at home and the performance against PSG were some of the best performances under Solskjaer's reign. I think that Pogba is a major, major problem because I think we try and apply sort of highfalutin logic about positional sense and all this kind of caper, where you actually just need to be looking at something and thinking, you're just not actually trying very hard. And that, you know, there's a lot to be said for effort combined with coaching. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be running around like a headless chicken and showing passion, in inverted commas, but you do actually need to be showing some desire to improve the team. So to round back a little bit, United, to my mind, are going to continue to be like this. And it's partially as well, as we've discussed privately, all of us, that you know, United needed improvement in squad depth. They were running on fumes at the end of last season. And, you know, they had effectively no pre-season. So I don't think a slow start is especially shocking to me, but I don't see any real, you know, cause for optimism that it's going to change in any significantly positive way.
Yeah, look, I would have been of the opinion that sacking Solskjaer would not have any change in this current season, at least. So I do think, I still kind of think that it might be worthwhile keeping him on, because I think that sacking a manager middle of the season when another manager coming in won't change anything anyway, would be a bit of a weird move. And the fact that there's so much issues off the pitch at Manchester United at the minute, and in the board level, where they just can't get these transfers done, that it's hard to know whether, if Pochettino comes in, yes, he might improve the current crop of players, but will he actually get the players that they want? Because if you look at the transfer market over the last couple of years, Donny van de Beek, no matter what anybody says, he is definitely not what Solskjaer would have identified as a player that he needed. And I think Solskjaer has said that on a number of occasions inadvertently. So you're looking at like a Pochettino coming in. Is Ed Woodward going to get the players that he wants? Then it might lead to another year down the road where we're at the same situation with United, where they didn't get players that they wanted. They went for 3 to 4 different players that were down below on their list, and then we're looking at them thinking they're not good enough. And I think that's been an issue with United since Alex Ferguson left. There's no clear direction, and I do think a lot of that does fall on Solskjaer's door as well. He needs to be stronger when it comes to it, and he doesn't seem to have any clearly identified plan for Manchester United that's taken any shape over the last couple of years. Call many losers you'd like to stick on the pile?
I just want, like, that's not a reason not to get rid of Solskjaer. Is that, Andy Mitten says it a lot when he's on with us, and I think Andy Mitten's brilliant when he comes on with us, and I agree with so much of what he says. But what I consistently disagree with him is on that United have gone through an array of managers in the last 7 years and it hasn't worked, so why should we change that? But that's like saying you're in a relationship where you're unhappy, so I won't change it because I've been in loads of other relationships. It's like, you have to, if it's not working out, like, we know it's not going to work now at this stage.
But for example,
so change it.
But for example, what is the difference between finishing out the season, which, to be fair, if you look at Solskjaer's reign, the likelihood is United finishing the top four again this year, because they will go on these runs. They are inconsistent, but they will go on these runs where they win games. What's the difference between doing that and getting in Pochettino at this stage? Because Pochettino's not going to win the league with United this year.
Why would you wait? If we wait now, Pochettino could go to another club, and then we just waited too long. And also, Alex Ferguson came in November to Manchester United because he was going nowhere and succeeded.
Sorry.
Jose Mourinho came into Spurs in November. Go ahead, Kieran.
Sorry, there's a bit of a delay. So I don't agree that nothing would change. Pochettino is a very good coach. I don't think Solskjaer is a very good coach. He would be able to initiate some form of tactical system that would benefit the players that he has at his disposal. Now, look, the Woodward thing is obviously extremely frustrating. The recruitment thing is extremely frustrating, but that's going to be a constant, right? So that's going to happen regardless of who you have in charge. So you try and get the stuff that you can get in place. Now, at the moment, with the best will in the world, we all want to see Solskjaer do well. Like, if you're a United fan, obviously the ideal thing would be to see him lead the club to glory, but there's no real consistent signal that that's going to happen. United also don't want to be a club that are seen to be chopping and changing the change of every wind blow. But he's not showing enough. And the fact is, if he wasn't a United legend, he would be under a lot more scrutiny than he already is, and he's under a lot. I just think that there seems to be a lot of revisionism around, particularly Pochettino. I just don't really recognise the validity. And then also, on the recruitment side, he didn't get everyone that he wants at Spurs. I mean, there was one transfer window at Spurs where they literally didn't sign a player. I think it was the first time in Premier League history that it ever happened.
Yeah, it was the year before.
And in fact, that was the season that went on to the Champions League final.
By no stretch of the imagination do I think Solskjaer is going to win the Premier League with Manchester United. But the last couple of years, I think the issues at United run much deeper than Solskjaer. And I suppose one benefit of getting Pochettino in now is that you can start planning for the summer. But I'm not by any idea in my head thinking that Solskjaer's not planning for next summer. I would say he is. The issue is you get to summer and Ed Woodward is so incompetent when it comes to getting these deals over the line that you get to the start of the season and he still hasn't signed anybody. The Cavani signing screamed panic buy. And it was just another summer wasted. And it was the same last summer when they stumbled the whole summer trying to get the Maguire deal over the line and they neglected everything else. It was the same this year. They tried so hard to get the Sancho deal over the line that they neglected the key areas of the pitch that they actually needed to improve. And unless that changes, fundamentally, United will struggle regardless of what manager. Now, I do agree. I do think Pochettino would be a better coach and would do a better job at United, but I don't think they're in a position to chance for a trophy as long as they continue to be inept in the transfer market the way they are. Anyway, Manchester United, they're losers for this season so far. We might return to this after Christmas or something to see where they're at. Colin, many losers for you?
I would say Sean Dyche at Burnley. They're 19th. They haven't won a game yet. And I think loser in the sense that I think that great relationship is breaking up, speaking of relationships, the Sean Dyche and Burnley one.
Are you okay, Colin? Did something happen?
No, I just want to continue with that analogy. That's all. I just want to stick with it. Consistency.
You had your heart broken recently.
I'm very happy. The Dyche Burnley scenario, I just think it's run its course, and I would be very surprised if come the end of the season he was still at the club, and I would be even more surprised if come next season Burnley were still a Premier League team. And it's... they're losing the sense that it's sad for them that that's broken up. I personally wouldn't miss Burnley at all. I would be happy for them to get relegated. But I think it's been a surprisingly bad season for Burnley so far. We're only 7 or 8 games in, depending on the team. But I didn't see this coming. And, lads, what I have in front of me here is an OTB Sports article. Premier League 2020-21 predictions. Team OTB reveals all. So dated the 11th of September, so the day before the new season started, right? And I can't find Sean Dyche being sacked as the first choice of anybody here.
No.
So, Andy, do you remember yours? Because I haven't.
My, who was my, was it Scott Parker, I think?
No, yours, Endo, was Mr. Moyes.
Oh, David Moyes, yeah. I mean, he's been a surprise this season. West Ham are actually on my winners chart for this week. And we'll also return to that article because it's very important when it comes to the winners as well. Yeah, Burnley are a great example of a club that came up to the Premier League and they trusted in Dyche when they got relegated the first time. And then they sort of grew ideas of who they are without realising what got them there. What got them there was Sean Dyche and his ability to coach a side to stay in the Premier League, but with consistent investment within the team. And last year, he was considerably angry at the board when it came to the transfer market. And again, this summer, when they sold Jeff Hendrick, he was livid. And now they're in a relegation zone and they're really struggling. So it happens with the clubs the size of Burnley these days that you just need that continued investment. And if you don't get that, then you're never going to improve and you're ultimately going to be missing out on the stages of the Premier League that other teams that are investing in are actually gaining in. So the Burnley are on the losers list along with Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Kieran, any losers for you?
I was looking at the rest of the table. It's actually quite hard to see anyone that's significantly underperforming. It's funny with Burnley, though, because I think, that, to my mind at least, they regularly start the season actually quite poorly. And, you know, a few people, you know, end up with egg on their face at the end of the season. I'm not saying that about you, Colin, but, like, you just kind of find that they do find something from somewhere. I would certainly agree that it seems like Dyche, I can't imagine he would go mid-season, but I definitely would say that he's got to consider his own options and realise that your stock, you know, while it might be limited in terms of the clubs that you can go to, you have to leave while you're on a relative high. And it's very clear that Burnley aren't going to invest. And obviously, it's particularly difficult at the moment given the COVID considerations. I'd say one that struck me was West Brom as well, for the reason that there was a bit of uncertainty around Slaven Bilic's future. They sold Ahmed Lagazi past the transfer window here. I think he went to Saudi Arabia, if memory serves. But that was a big breakdown in communication between the board and the manager. And I mean, to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if he was one of the first ones to go without any sort of crowd, any breakdown in relationship with the board. But it seems like it's more and more likely that's going to happen. I'm happy to say that my form of picking the worst possible shout for, you know, first sacking or anything like that was bang on, because I picked Dean Smith. I thought he would sort of falling off at the end of last season, but they've been brilliant. But anyway, we might leave that for a little bit later.
Yeah, well, Manchester City lads.
Manchester City have been really disappointing this year, really. Like,
yeah, definitely loses by their standards.
Mid-table form, and their performances just haven't been impressive at all.
If Pep Guardiola
is a big mid-table
next season, I would be shocked. Shocked. Whatever about Dyche. Yeah. Like, Pep is one foot out the door already.
It really does seem that way, and potentially there's a lot of murmurings that he might be returned to Barcelona. We'll see how Ronald Koeman gets on over there. Two names that I want to stick on the losers list just before we finish up this segment. Sheffield United, 1 point so far, really suffering from second season syndrome. I know they lost Jack O'Connell for the rest of the season and they lost Dean Henderson as well, but they've been found out, essentially. That's what happened this year. They didn't score enough goals last year. They're not scoring enough goals this year. And they're just conceding because they're so sought after and talked about. Defensive five has been picked apart. And that's just what happens when you come to the Premier League. You might do well one season. This following season is when it's really important. So Sheffield United, 1 point so far. They're definitely on the losers list, along with Solskjaer and along with West Brom and Burnley. And Scott Parker. How is Scott Parker escaped this topic so far? I mean, Fulham are by far and away the worst team in the league this year.
Well, they're 17th.
Yeah, but I mean, they have 4 points. They're 3 points ahead of the relegation zone, or ahead of the bottom of the table. They're by far and away the worst team. Like, no question about it.
Take that at the end of the season, wouldn't you?
but they're not, though. They're the fourth worst team.
On form.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, come on, like, that's not even in a loser category. That's in the least surprising news category of the season. Like, everybody, as soon as, as Fulham beat Brentford in the playoff, everybody was, that's a waste of a space. It's a waste of a Premier League space.
Yeah.
As, like, as much as everyone likes Fulham, and, you know, reminiscent of the Jan Tagana era when they first came up in 2001 and Luis Saha was up front and Steve Malbranck, and then you had the Roy Hodgson Europa League team that got to the final in 2010 and the Great Escape team in this, was it the same year or the year, 2 years before. Like, Fulham have just lost all of their pizzazz, and they're just, they're the definition of a yo-yo team. I'd categorise them with Norwich and Watford.
Yeah.
Do you know, they're just, you can't trust them.
And Adama Lookman is definitely probably on the list.
I'm very sorry. I don't mind that penalty miss. I really don't. He tried something, it completely backfired, but like, he missed a penalty like someone who blasts a penalty misses it.
Yeah.
Like, he's still, it's the same miss.
He missed a penalty like Colin Bourke would miss a penalty. going out with style, it still doesn't help you when your team's in a relegation dogfight. But you know what? Since we knew Fulham were going to be there anyway, I'm going to change my losers to Brentford, who aren't even in the Premier League, because they were an incredibly entertaining side to watch last season in the Championship. Fell just short, and they've now lost their two best players, and now they're a mid-table Championship side once again. Bayrama and Ollie Watkins has gone to Aston Villa, and obviously he scored that really great hat-trick against Liverpool. So Brentford are taking their place in the losers list of the Premier League so far, oddly enough, even though they're not in the Premier League. We do have to take a quick break though, and after the break we'll be running through the winners of the Premier League season so far.
Team 33. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back to Team 33 and a call here with you. So if you want to get involved in the conversation tonight, who are your winners and losers of the Premier League so far? You can text us on 53106 or tweet us at Team 33. That's all spelled out in words. And if you want to listen back to the show after the fact, you can get it in the OTB app as well on the podcast section. So losers before the break, we went through the Manchester United, Burnley, West Brom, Brentford, oddly enough, and a couple others in between. I can't, Sheffield United, that's the last name on the list. I couldn't remember who it was. Winners so far, we mentioned them in brief before the break in terms of how good they've been. Aston Villa, definitely going down as the number one winners of the Premier League season so far. Relegation candidates last season, escaped on the last day of the season, made some brilliant signings with Ollie Watkins, Ross Barkley, and a couple others besides that. Colm, Aston Villa, 7-2. Beating the reigning champions, and they should have been relegated last year if VAR had been turned on.
Yeah, the Sheffield United match, wasn't it? Villa Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just wasn't turned on.
We've all been there. They are brilliant. Brilliant play, Villa. And I kind of agreed with you. Like, I didn't put Dean Smith in my first to go list, but I definitely considered him. I really thought when they beat West Ham at the last day of last season to stay up, I thought that was going to be reminiscent of West Bromwich Albion's great escape in, I think it was 2005, and Kieran Richardson, the former United winger, was the hero. And then the next season they just went out with a whimper, I think. I'm open to correction on the fact that they got relegated the next season, but I'm almost certain they did. So I thought that was going to happen with Villa this year. But those two matches, the Liverpool and the Arsenal games, like you mentioned Ollie Watkins there already, but obviously all the talk is of Jack Grealish. One thing I didn't realise with Grealish is how fast he is. I had him down for an extremely technical player, and I guess he looks the part too, to match the technique, and he's the definition of a flair player and probably a bit traditional in that sense. But his pace, that goal on the counter-attack at the Emirates, it's brilliant to watch. I have a hankering for a counter-attack goal, and that was brilliant play. But they've been excellent. So no matter what happens this season, those two matches will live long in kind of Premier League memory, especially at a time when there are games every 3 days and everything becomes forgettable because everything's on at the same time or all the time. But those two games were just exceptional performances. And Villa are doing fantastically well. So I would say if it came to last season and they were 17th, that would still be a successful season for Villa, but they're defying all odds at the moment.
Yeah, Emi Martinez is probably the signing of the season so far in terms of just a transformative effect on a team. It's they went from having one of the worst defences in the league to being the team that went the longest this season with clean sheets. And Aston Villa currently sitting in, where are they in the table? They are in fifth now, so or sixth, sorry, with 15 points on the board. So they essentially only have 25 points to go for an Aston Villa season to stay up, and it'll probably take less than that this season in terms of the amount of points that it'll take to survive. So Aston Villa are already way ahead of where they are. Jack Grealish, obviously world class, but the one performance that actually stood out to me, which is bizarre, is their defeat to Leeds, which stands out because of Patrick Bamford's hat-trick in that game and how good Leeds were in that second half. But Aston Villa, I was sitting there watching them, and they were genuine top eight in terms of their performance and the way that they were playing in that game. Like they're a genuinely good team that could, over the course of a season, actually be in the top half of the table, Kieran.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I was watching that game and it was one of the ones where I was really struck by how good Leeds were, and with exactly the same thoughts that actually they really wouldn't look out of place. And I've thought this for a while anyway, but they wouldn't look out of place in the top half. But Villa have looked really good, and you kind of forget, it's mad how the cycles of football news work, but like Ollie Watkins and Ross Barkley to an extent were seen as quite risky signings. Obviously spent a lot of money on Watkins and Barkley, and they hadn't necessarily been in the best of form at Chelsea, but it's changed as good as a rest, and they've looked fantastic going forward. In particular, Grealish has really just hit another gear, which is scary enough for the teams in and around that area, because he was brilliant to begin with. He's my favourite footballer to watch, I think, outside of the team I support. He's just brilliant, and as you say, I was struck particularly in that Arsenal game about speed, and I think it was Ian Wright that was talking about it, the fact that he's probably been told to add that element to his game, and my god, even the strength, like to just bust Bellerin off was outstanding. So I think he's really relishing the fact that Villa are starting to match his own ambition to the extent that they can, so I'd be really excited to see how they get on, and I really would hope that they cement it a little bit and maybe even make a little push for Europe, depending on how things go. It's good as well, just to round back to the Dean Smith point, was that he was excellent at Brentford, and he was one of these managers that was appointed by their management team there because he was, showing up well on the stats, the analytics. And it maybe didn't quite hit the same key when he went straight into Villa. But in fairness, he's really pulling it together now. And yeah, great. It's really, really good.
I think Dean Smith goes down as a winner as well because John Terry didn't swoop in and get his job initially, which I thought a lot of people, which would probably have happened if they did get relegated. And thank God for that. I think we're all winners, the fact that John Terry's not managing a current Championship or Premier League team. So Aston Villa, Jack Grealish, brilliant so far this season. There's a couple of names I do want to get to, but Colm, anybody stand out to you so far?
Oh, Ralph Hasenhüttl. Southampton currently lying in fourth, but his redemption from the absolute annihilation they took at home to Leicester City last season has been unbelievable, because when everybody heard about that result on that Friday night, people were just expecting that push notification to come through within about 12 hours, and it never did, and Southampton stayed with him, and it's just been brilliant. And to have I know Danny Ings is out injured now, but that partnership with Che Adams up front is excellent. James Ward-Prowse seems to be getting better. Those two free kicks he scored against Aston Villa, funnily enough, at Villa Park, were exceptional. They were David Beckham-esque. And actually, all of Southampton's four goals that day in the 4-3 win away to Villa were brilliant. All sorts of different types of goals. And, it's not great for Irish fans that the likes of Shane Long and Michael Obafemi can't get into the Southampton team, but they are one of the better teams to watch as a result of that partnership up front, and the fact that they have this really solid midfield now. And it all comes down to Hasenhüttl and how he has redeemed that team that were on the brink of total collapse, both morally and physically in the Premier League. So he's done brilliantly. Football's very fickle. We're only 8 games into the season. Like, there are literally 30 games to go, so there's so much up for grabs still, and we could be having the same conversation in 3 months' time, and Southampton could be down battling, and we'll be saying, like, oh, it's time for Hasenhüttl to go. But I think whatever happens, they started the season so well this season, and that's down to Hasenhüttl and how he regrouped after that defeat, because I think everybody was surprised that he stayed at the club, never mind succeeded.
Yeah, it was a real low point, but again, they turned it into a positive by keeping him on and almost made a threat that the players will go before the manager goes, and I think that's important in a modern era, especially if you have a project coach like Hasenhüttl, who is going to progress the team, but it needs to be a couple of years. Che Adams is the prime example of just adding that extra layer to a side that needed it, because Danny Ings scored 23 goals last season, but nobody else was scoring at all. So adding Che Adams' goals into that is going to be really important for them going forward in the season. Kieran, before I move on to my winners, anybody you want to throw into the pile?
Yeah, Leeds. I think that it's funny because it's such a fast-moving season that you look at the table now and you think, oh, well, they're in 15th, they can't be doing that well. But they have continued the way that they played in the Championship, which was swashbuckling, beautiful, using every inch of the pitch, football. And the fact that Patrick Bamford's really found his legs, I would say, thanks in part to a lack of crowds. I think the Leeds fans tended to give him quite a lot of stick, particularly when I was at a game at Forest last season. But it's just great to see Bielsa not compromise. And the way their signings tend to work, at least from what I understand, is that it takes a good while for them to be really pushed into the team, because it takes a long time for them to really understand what Bielsa is trying to do. But if you look at how they played at Anfield at the first game of the season, that was probably the best I've seen a team play. They were unlucky not to at least get a draw from that. They've beaten Fulham at home in a 4-3 match, so they're a real winner for the Premier League. Like, they're bringing a lot of entertainment, I'm just delighted to see them back, and it'll be great once we are able to get fans in and Leeds are able to be properly supported.
And in terms of moral victories, Leeds are definitely top of the table in that, because they've had some great performances, but again, it's the Premier League, so you need to start actually getting points for those performances. You know, you're not going to stay in it too long unless you get points on the table, and that's just something Leeds have struggled with despite the great displays. Crystal Palace, for me, have been winners, and they're exactly where I thought they would be at this stage of the season. And this is where I wanted to go back to that article, column. If you look at that article, I think Roy Hodgson is on at least 5 to 6 people's list as manager, first manager to be sacked, because they thought they were going to fall apart. Roy Hodgson does what Roy Hodgson does best. He's practical, he's pragmatic, and he's added Eze to the team along with Zaha. They now have a little bit of star quality, and they're going to be exactly where they were last season. They're going to do extremely well for the first couple of weeks, and probably until January, February time, they'll get to the 40 points mark, and then they will just put the feet up, relax, they're safe in the Premier League for one more year. I don't think Crystal Palace are in any danger of relegation until Roy Hodgson leaves. That's where I think the real issues will start to arise. But really, the winner so far, and Brendan Rodgers aside, maybe like he might be a winner in his own eyes, but Jose Mourinho, he is a definite winner from this, and he's going to benefit largely from the weirdness of the season and how poor other sides have been, and how Liverpool have had players out injured, and how Man City have been poor, and Manchester United have been awful. This is genuinely the year where Jose Mourinho could win the league again, and it could be Spurs' first title for how many years?
Spurned on, I no doubt, by our review of the All or Nothing documentary on Spurs. Still very early days in the season, still very much room for the Mourinho capitulation, but a brilliant start, and who knew that the secret of Spurs' success was to ostracise Dele Alli, because ever since that opening game of the season, the 1-0 defeat at home to Everton where Dele was subbed at half time, they've come on leaps and bounds. I think their next game was away to Southampton and they were under massive pressure. I think in many people's eyes Mourinho was on the verge of leaving the club. They had a horrific first half, and then the second half they annihilated Southampton, courtesy of the Harry Kane and Son partnership up front. Then you add Gareth Bale into the mix now, and that's a seriously good front three if Bale can return to any sort of semblance of form that he showed at Spurs before he left the first time. So the front three looked fantastic, and Ndombele seems to be playing much more regularly this season. And I did hear last season that from a few Spurs players that he was by far the most talented player in the squad in training, and now he seems to be showing it on the pitch. And then Højbjerg from Southampton, has slotted in really nicely. So it's a really solid team, and it's looking very much like a Jose Mourinho team that we would have known from his two Chelsea spells.
Yeah.
And that's probably the ominous part for everybody else. Now, I thought that Mourinho did not have a title run left in him. And I was kind of on the side of thinking that this is his last major job, and it's not really a Class A job that he would consider as well. But he's doing a really good job. I'm actually already interested in to see what he'll do after this job, because I don't think he's going to stay there very long, regardless of the success. But it's been a really good start. It's been a strange season because I wasn't really thinking that Leicester City were doing that well, and yet they're top of the table. Wasn't really paying too much attention to them. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's still that... it's still Liverpool are just by far and away better than everybody else. But, you know, the table at the moment isn't showing that. It's funny, but that's what I think will happen eventually, that Liverpool will win the league pretty easily.
Well, I mean, Joe Gomez is now out injured.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
like, they're running,
it's an average league.
They're running very, very low on centre-backs at the minute. But, yeah, Højbjerg adds that layer to Tottenham that allows Ndombele to play, I think, because Ndombele was being shoehorned into a defensive midfield role. That's just not his strength at all. He's much better going forward than he is defensively. And who knew Harry Kane would turn into the best number 10 in the Premier League this year?
Well, that's his preferred position. That's where he wants to play.
It's
number 10.
It's amazing, though. Like, it's just these players just... I think he's just so talented that it's almost like a Wayne Rooney in his day, that you'd play him anywhere and he'd actually be intelligent enough on the pitch to know what to do in that role. Kieran, what have you made of Tottenham so far?
They've been really good. Well, I mean, bar the Everton performance at the start of the season, I think they're showing characteristics of a Mourinho team that you'd recognise. Obviously, as Colm alluded to, like their physicality is burgeoning. They are nicking wins. They're you know, getting late goals. So it's really important to rack up the points. And I noticed in Mourinho's press conference after the Brighton game, where obviously he's bawling out Adam Lallana for, I mean, just usual Mourinho nonsense. But he wasn't doing it actually with that sulk that you got used to seeing at the back end of his Chelsea and United career. He's doing it with a real sort of fire in his belly, and I think it was, you know, as much a message to his team to try and get that Sikh mentality going. And I think he recognises that in most other circumstances, Spurs probably wouldn't be in contention for the Premier League, but I firmly believe they are. They've got probably, you know, the second best front three, perhaps behind Liverpool, with Son, Bale and Kane, obviously dependent on Kane's fitness and form. Bale's fitness and form. But it's looking reasonably good. And to be honest with you, a successful season for them beforehand would have been Champions League. I don't think that really changes anything now. But, you know, you'd be wrong to not have a sneaking suspicion that Jose's thinking, yeah, we can probably do this this year if things fall in our favour.
Well, again,
it's a bang average league.
Yeah, it's
an average league.
Yeah, like you could say that you can put this down to the Premier League being incredibly competitive, but it's just the fact that everyone is so poor this year.
But everyone's wrecked. The players are knackered. Like, they can't be taking much joy in this. I know they earn outrageous amounts of money and they get to play football all day. I get it. It's a complete, like, the ultimate first world complaint. But it's actually to the detriment of our enjoyment of the game, because they look pretty miserable playing at the moment, because it's just this conveyor belt of matches in front of nobody. It's like a existential crisis. But, like, even the Manchester United match against Everton, you know, if United lose that match, there's a good chance Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to leave the club. There's a good chance something drastic is going to happen. And I watched the game, and Everton are just remarkably poor. There's no cohesion at all in their team. They can't string three or four passes together. It's remarkable. And Everton were seen as one of the real standout performers in the first few games of the season. Now they've lost the last three. It's such an inconsistent league. Like, I don't the marketing of the Premier League is criticised a lot. And sometimes rightly so. But I think they're excellent at their marketing. I think they know exactly how to push their brand. It's actually a lesson to other companies. Mm. But the reality of the product, it's so different. You know, I'd be paying like €10 for on Now TV for a match, like the Everton Man United game, because I don't have BT Sport. And you're, you know, you're about, you know, 35 minutes into it, and you're like, this, like, it's actually so bizarre that I'm paying this money for this.
Yeah, it's gotten to the stage now where, and the managers are complaining about it because they want to protect their players from injury, but you're diluting the product if you're forcing players to, and it comes down to the associations. All the associations have lost loads of money in this pandemic, and they want to make up for it as much as they can. The international fixtures that were on this week that we didn't touch on because we're recording before the Ireland game should not be going. Why are we playing international friendlies in the middle of a pandemic? It makes no sense to me. You're squeezing the season. Yeah, you're squeezing the season already just to make room for all the competitions for the clubs. Playing international friendlies is just insanity to me. It makes no sense. And like what it's actually going to do is it's going to dilute the product because players are going to get injured, players are going to be tired, and we're going to end up with terrible games because the players just they just physically can't do it at that level that often. To play current players now are playing a game every 3 days. That's a reality, and
but they're not training. They're surely not training. They're like they're not improving off the pitch because there's no time. It's just match recovery.
Well, that's the thing that Solskjaer, like so people mock Solskjaer when he came out strongly saying that the United shouldn't be playing at 12:30 on a Saturday, having played in Turkey on the Wednesday night, and then Klopp came out and said the exact same thing because he's not talking about the fact that they're playing these games so close to each other in days. He's talking about hours because what Klopp said was really interesting because he said that 4 hours is a recovery period for these players to actually get their bodies ready to play in these fixtures, and they're not getting that at the minute. So I suppose the players and the fans are both in loser section so far for the winners and losers this Premier League so far. But we're just out of time. I think we will return to this. I think we might do a deep dive into that and what that means and get an expert on to describe what this is actually doing to their players' bodies and what's actually happening how bad it is and what the effects of that is on the pitch. But we don't have time for that at the minute. We will have time for that eventually in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. If you want to listen back to any of that, you can get it in the OTB Podcast Network, in the app as well. Text us on 53106. Who are your winners and losers? What are your opinions on the congested season so far? Just give us a text or give us a tweet at Team33, all spelled out in words. Kieran, Colm, thanks very much.
Cheers, lads.
We'll take a quick break.
Team 33. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Very welcome back. So that's all we have time for on Team 33 this evening. Thanks to you for listening. And a reminder again, if you missed any of that or you want to listen back to any of the Team 33 podcasts, you can find us in the OTB Sports app in the Team 33 podcast section. Subscribe to the podcast as well if you want to get notified every time we have one up. Generally, they're live between Thursday and Friday anyway. And again, we're out on the radio at 9 o'clock every single Friday looking at the cultural side of football and some different takes in terms of what's going on the pitch at the minute. We will be back again with another show in the same time, same place. But until then, take away, Johan. We'll be right back.